then for today's last session. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Christian Kaufmann. CK is VP Technology at Akamai, holds both a JNCIE and a CCIE, which I don't know how you manage time-wise, but nice job. And ever since I know him, he's been the chairman of RIBE-NCC. But eventually, when I got onto a plane to fly to Rotterdam, I met him and he was stepping down and becoming chair of ICANN. And then I thought to myself, what is ICANN actually? And just as a quick show of hands, who here can fill out that abbreviation quickly? What does ICANN stand for? That's a few people. So I guess it's a good thing we were doing this talk then, because you were as smart as I was before I had this two-hour flight and train ride with Christian. So I asked him if he would be interested in giving a talk, and luckily, by the end of the train ride, he agreed to. So thank you, Christian, for being here, and the stage is yours.
Thank you. So first of all, I'm just on the ICANN board. I'm not the chair, not that I get stoned afterwards for that little detail. And I want to congratulate the PC to actually put 400 gig coherent optics and internet governance in one slot. That's quite a humor. And with that, let's start. As it usually is with policy and anything about internet governance, you need a disclaimer, otherwise it's not a proper presentation. So I did that. When I talked with Momo about the presentation, I thought he meant a three-day workshop, till he said, no, it's like 20 minutes. I said, okay, so we got to shorten that a little bit and simplify it. So all the people which are experts on that, forgive me if I oversimplify. Probably also worthwhile to note that this is coming from a technical person, and you will see in a second why I make that comment, because if you actually talk to a policy person and someone who does that for life and is probably a trained lawyer, then they explain it very different than me. But I thought, you know, coming from a technical person, that actually might relate more to how we usually think and interact. As I'm on the ICANN board, I guess I should say that this is my personal view and not an ICANN presentation. They don't even know I'm here, so don't tell them. Very quick overview, because that goes a little bit back on the last slide. Why does one end up there and actually has an interest in these topics? I guess I was partially Shanghaied into it. I have all the fancy titles he said. Besides that, they're now Emiratios, so I guess they have expired and I just pay for them, but still have them, so fair enough. I had quite an interest in peering. That was one of my specialities. And then I started actually 17, 18 years ago to be on the board of AMSIX. And, you know, if you have one, you start collecting them after a while. And then I really liked RIBE meetings and the parties. So I thought, okay, let's be on the RIBE board as well. That was like 12 years ago till I stepped down. And then, you know, it's kind of a rabbit hole. Suddenly you find this internet governance thingy interesting to a degree. And so I ended up on the ICANN board. What is internet governance? Well, the term in itself is already a little bit misleading. There was always some kind of form of governance, or we technical people, I guess, actually prefer the word coordination. You got your IP addresses in the very first time from John Purcell, and I guess he, if he had an Excel sheet, I don't know, gave it out. That's already kind of form of governance and coordination. But it really started with the foundation of ICANN, when there was a need to coordinate things on a global level. And that was 98, so this acronym, and we come to it, what it means, is by now 25 years old. We just had the 25-year anniversary in Hamburg a couple of weeks ago. I think we as a technical community usually see it more as a coordination function. So the whole IANA function, how does the RAS get IP addresses, who publishes the root zone, and all of these things, we wouldn't see as a typical governance function. But other people, especially the policy people, certainly call that governance. Certainly, at a later stage, and I come to that as well, when the UN started to have an interest in this internet thing shortly after 2000, and they founded the Working Group for Internet Governance, everything which had roughly something to do with computer and internet, they put all together into internet governance. So, latest at this point, the term was coming up and used. A quick, not necessarily exhaustive list of who actually participates in that environment. So one part certainly is the whole ICANN thing. So you see here what it actually means. And ICANN operates in what we call a multi-stakeholder environment. So you have actually a lot of different groups, which usually stick more to themselves, coming together in under one umbrella, usually a meeting, but there are mailing lists and other parts as well. Some of the supporting organizations, as we call it, are the CCNSO. So, by the way, everything about internet governance is acronyms. So when you join ICANN, you get 10,000 to learn. But CCNSO stands for the country top-level domains, country code. So everything at .de, .no, whatever, these are the country code names of operators, so the CCNSO. Then you have the generic ones. This is everything .com, .net, and whatever came afterwards. And you have the ASO, the Address Supporting Organization, which is basically all the RARs. You have a couple of advisory ones. ALEC is probably the most bizarre one, which is Internet at Large, which is all the end users in some kind of form. Often they are also in an ISOC chapter. You have the ESSAC, Security Stability Advisory, the Root Server Advisory Council. These are all technical groups which have something to do with the internet, and then they give their own input into ICANN and into the policies. They also actually appoint board members. The advisory functions have non-voting ones, at least for ESSAC, ASSAC, and for the GAC. And the other ones, the CCNSO, GNSO, have real voting ones. I'm one of the ASO, there are two of them. And then you get a board with 18 people, which is quite a challenge to manage. The GAC is interesting because the GAC is the Government Advisory Council. We see it in my fancy diagram in a second. You have governments, as there's also the word internet governance, as well. The GAC in itself actually is a forum of, I think, roughly 150 countries, which send one or two people to an ICANN meeting, to a dedicated room, and then they comment on ICANN things. So if there's a new topic, one of the topics is the who is disclosure, or you might have heard about the new generic top-level domains. So there's a new round supposed to come where you then can register .your name. They give advice. They can't vote, they can't make a particular decision, but they give advice, and we are really looking into it and take that serious. Another one is the root server operators. They are kind of affiliated to ICANN. ICANN doesn't control them, they do whatever they want. But they at least are part of that bigger umbrella. Then we have the regional internet registries. This is the RIPES, I guess that is halfway known, and then the other four are ARIN, EFRINIC, APNIC, LACNIC for the different regions in the world. The ITF, which is an own body with their own rules, own policies. We have the ISOC, that's a little bit a strange one. Originally, it was the secretariat for the ITF. That's what they were supposed to do. Then they did a lot of other things, and I guess now they're a little bit in a self-finding phase. We have governments and NGOs. Which have an opinion about the internet, how it should look like, and how it actually should be regulated, or how the whole thing should work. What I would not call parts of the internet governance are internet exchanges. The reason I mention them is because they act a little bit like it. So the member-based ones, like an AMSIX, Lynx and FranceX and many other smaller ones, they have members, right? So if you have a port, you usually can become a member, you can actually be on the board and steer the organization, and it is non-for-profit. So many of the things from the bottom up, and that you have an influence on the whole thing, is replicated there, even if I wouldn't see them as a typical player in that ecosystem. There are two fundamental components which are getting spoken about and again and again. One is bottom-up process, and the other one is the multi-stakeholderism. So whenever you have something to do with internet governance and you would have a bingo card, these two you should have, because they will come up all the time. The interesting part is that everything you might know from the ITU or from other bodies or from governments, all of that is kind of top-down, right? Someone makes an acronym a decision, and then for that particular field, then this is the decision, the policy, and how it works. And this is not so much true for the internet, right? the protocols are coming from the ITF. If you have nothing better to do, you can go there and be part of that. If you have an opinion about address policy at RIPE in 1.5 weeks in Rome, you're more than welcome. You can come to the microphone and have an influence there as well. And this is true for most of the players besides the governments, which I've shown in the on the page before. And that is the whole bottom-up process. So you can bring yourself in. In a way, it is based democracy is probably a big word, but you have an influence, right? You don't have to take what is actually coming. All of these, we call them constituency and ICANN terminologies, the ASO, CCNSO, and so on, they have their own policy development process. So it wasn't even a one-size-fits-all. All of these constituencies say, you know, how they vote for board members and appoint them, but also their policies and how they dispute and solve issues between them is actually done in these working groups themselves, because there's nobody above them, so they have to figure it out themselves, and this is this whole bottom-up process. On a level higher, then, you have these constituency interacting with ICANN. And there are still new ones coming in, like the root server operators, which I mentioned before, the 13, which are now all independent, are actually now thinking about forming a body, the root server governance working group, and see what are the common things without giving away their independence, but actually govern themselves and have some rules they want to stick to. And then, actually not too familiar with them, but the ITF has the area directors, the IAB, the Internet Architecture Board, and they're doing their own thing, right? So nobody dictates that, and it comes from the members and the participants where you can have a direct influence if you have interest in one of these topics. That happens if I have to do the slides myself. That's the most advanced part I can deliver. Important. The other second important word is multi-stakeholder. The idea is, probably one step back, to have a certain legitimacy and an authority over a topic. You are either a government, then you have a police and an army, or you know the ITU, I guess, has the mandate from the United Nations and the countries, and that's how they have the power to decide things. In the multi-stakeholder environment and the internet governance here, nobody gave RIPE or anyone else the power. It came from the members giving it to them and then creating policies, as one example. So to now be legitimate enough, and that actually someone says, yeah, they have their house in order, and whatever they do makes sense, and they're actually open and inclusive, because at the moment where you start excluding people and not letting them in, then you know it's kind of smoke-filled room and tribal ism and all of that, and then you lose legitimacy. So the whole internet governance gets a lot of legitimacy by inviting everyone. Everybody can comment and you know have an opinion and give their input, which, to be honest, is fair enough also from that perspective that the internet, even if we are technical people, so we would be all technical community, we are not just building it for us, right? We're building it for whatever, humankind, if you want, society. And therefore, having actually the private sector, academia, or civil society, having an opinion about it and voicing them and participating makes a lot of sense. So this is probably the underlying concept, the bottom-up and the multi-stakeholder for the internet governance, why the rest of the world says, okay, you, everybody is allowed in. You invite everyone. You document your processes. It's all clear and transparent. I think what you do is good, and we don't have to take over, at least so far. Going a little bit back and connecting the technical community part, which we described so far, was actually what the United Nations and the other ones did. Where's the intersection? How do these things fit together? In 2003, 2005, there were two meetings, one in Geneva, one in Tunis. And the United Nations tried to figure out what they now do with this new internet thingy. Is that something which should be under the ITU? Should we regulate? Should we have an eye on it? Can we actually still have an influence? And they didn't came to a consensus or, you know, came up with something they voted on which they all liked. One example was actually at this time the EU suggested that the US should give up control of ICANN, which happened in 2016 with the IANA transition. And that it should be an independent body and not controlled by our government. That came up in that discussions. And the best they could come up with and argue was, we have this World Summit of Information Society, and we create a meeting, a forum, the Internet Governance Forum. And then the people and the stakeholder can actually figure it out themselves, because we kind of can't control them really. And we also actually want that they do what they do, because everybody noticed that the internet is a very helpful thing. So they said, you go, figure it out, and then come once in a while back. This mandate, the WSIS mandate, came up for review with WSIS plus 10, so in 2015-16. And it actually comes up next in 2 years, 1.5 years, in 2025, where the UN again will actually have an eye on what they believe. If this multi-stakeholder model, where they're all different entities do their own thing and come together, works, or if they actually want to do something else. I guess it's not much fantasy needed to think that some countries might have a very different opinion. The Western societies are usually happy with the current state and how they like the internet, despite the local regulations they might have. But a Russia or China has a very different approach to the topic, and they probably would be happy if actually the particular state would control the internet more, and probably on a wider base as well, instead of having all these individual organizations doing it, which they don't control. The Internet Governance Forum is the meeting I mentioned, which came out of that. And I forgot what we had. We had year 12, 14, 16, I don't know. But that's a meeting which happened now every year. This year it was in Kyoto. 4 years ago, it was actually in this facility, in the Astral. And then you have roughly 4,000 people coming together. It's quite a big thing, where all the various stakeholder I have mentioned come together, including also governments. So in Kyoto, I ended up with the German delegation. So you see the state secretary for information or digital, and have a meeting with them. And then you see what the state and the particular government at the time actually thinks about the internet, and if they like the current state, or if they would actually be happy to regulate it more, do this or that. Topics which gets discussed there are internet fragmentation is a big one, but funny enough, not on a technical routing base, but on a policy base, that every country has different rules to the degree that they wouldn't fit together anymore. So if you have a German law and a French law, and suddenly, you know, the internet would be fragmented because these two rules couldn't work together. Otherwise, they look into stability, security, robustness. Everybody has figured out that they need it for their society, but also for their business. The Internet Governance Forum is very strange if you're a technical person and go there. You have a lot of people, which are way better dressed than me, have a lot of suits. You have a lot of lawyers, and all of them kind of talk, but there's no decision process done. So it is a little bit like a parliament, where actually the various topics gets discussed, and it might be the influence for lawmaking in a particular country, but there is actually barely any tangible outcome after that 1 week, where you can say now they have discussed that and that, and therefore that's how it looks like. So it's more a policy knowledge and technical knowledge sharing. And what is funny is this year the biggest bingo words were actually AI and quantum, where probably most of us would argue that's not exactly an internet topic. But as I said, they are happy to put everything which has something to do with computer and halfway connected into internet governance, and then it gets mentioned there as well. There was not a single talk without the word AI. So, well, the people who has left the room before has answered that question already for themselves. Is it important? Should I be part of it? The problem with the internet is that the whole internet and whatever cyberspace, if you want to call it like that, is not aligned to geographic boundaries, right? You can have local laws about whatever data retention, GDPR, random other stuff, but the whole routing in itself, the routing table, the namespace, all of that is global. So no government organization controls it or steers it per se. It is, well, to the degree we want, all of us, or at least the ones who has an interest in it. And that means also the governance of that whole construct is distributed as the internet itself. So depending on what you have an interest, IP addresses or name server or any other particular topic, one would have to involve themselves there. And usually it's the companies which have a stake in it which show up on these things. But I guess one thing is for sure, and that is that the governments will control to regulate and create laws, and I guess as a regular citizen of our country, that's also what you want. But ideally, it is better if they actually ask what and understand what the internet is about and how it works. Because what we, I guess, all have seen in the past is that there were various laws where they tried to solve one particular issue with something like DNS or blocking, and you still had the websites online, which was not made for that. And I guess sometimes they don't care, but if we believe we should actually have proper laws which actually reflect what we want to have as society, then it would be a good idea if the lawmakers have actually a clue about these things. And with that, for all the ones which are not yet asleep, questions, comments. I made it extra short, because if I give you another five organizations, you're five organizations more confused, and it doesn't help. But I thought it would be helpful if you actually talk a little bit about it. The bus is at 8:15, right? So.
All right. First off, thank you, CK. So now a quick show of hands. Who now knows what ICANN stands for? Hey, some people stayed awake. Jokes aside, I hope you also remember all the other abbreviations. There will be a test in the bus to do social. Okay, jokes aside. Any questions? Yes. It's a long walk.
Hi, Fiona Weber, WAPCOM, speaking for myself. A lot of the people working in internet or doing things in internet governance work for big tech companies, the exact same big tech companies that drive the gentrification of the internet. What if I, as a person of the civil society, want to improve things in the internet for the people, and if I want to get involved in the internet governance space? I don't think my employer has the budget to pay me to fly to all sorts of meetings and pay horrendous prices for the tickets and for hotels and whatnot. What can I, as a person of the civil society, do?
Thank you. I think there are a couple of things you can do. Now we start with advertisement. ICANN has realized that to a degree, right, that you need participation from all the various constituencies, as we call them. So there are actually programs like the Next Gen and the Fellowship Program, where there is travel support for a certain amount of people that they actually can join and participate. Otherwise, there are the concept of ALEC, the at-large community, but also ISOC chapters, which are, depending on the country, are more or less functional, which try to have an influence on policy or participate there as well. So I guess these would be the two I would try. Otherwise, the fellowship program is on the ICANN website, if that is helpful.
Franziska Lichblau, SAP, speaking for myself. So Fiona stole the easy question. So maybe to give you the chance to elaborate a little bit on the future. If I look back at the last 20 plus history of internet governance, the transition to the multi-stakeholder model was the big jump to adhere of the role of the internet as we see it today. How well do you see the system as it is right now being prepared for the world we live in right now? Not naming any particular events, but where do you think we are now and where will we be for the next couple of years?
Thank you. Probably going, we have 5.5 minutes, probably going one step back and actually talking a little bit about the threats for 1 second. So, you know, China, Russia often seen as a threat. I think if you paid some attention during the start of the Ukrainian war, there were questions or petitions, I'm not sure what the word I should use, where the minister in the Ukraine actually sent it letters to RIBE and ICANN to have an influence on the Russian aggressor and do something that they get offline, I guess. And these are one or two examples where I think that we as the internet community did actually very well to stay out of these political parts and be very conscious about that we are just our multi-stakeholder and bottom-up, and that we can actually do that and that we get let alone with that, means we also have to be neutral. If you go back to the IANA transition and now these corner cases, I think we as a community did quite a good job to actually show that we are capable of handling these situations. And certainly the Western countries, not the two big ones I mentioned, but certainly the Western countries, when you talk to them and the government delegation, they don't want to change the underlying work of the Internet Governance Forum, ICANN, and all of that construct fundamentally. They are actually, I believe, quite happy and have settled with it, and it's good. But you see, the more you have democracy in a country, the more you have that prevailing thought, the more you have different alternative government forms, if that is a good word, then they have a different opinion. But I'm actually quite positive that with the work we all have done on that way and the legitimacy we have, that we are actually in a good position. So I would assume that in 5 years at least, you know, the kind of the horizon I can look over, that it will not collapse or have a big problem. I would be positive that WSIST plus 20 keeps the current state. Carsten, I was waiting for that.
I know.
I'm not sure if I should be afraid or happy. Let's see. What do you have?
Let's see. Yeah, Carsten Schiefner, Internet Citizen, speaking for myself, of course, then. So there's one comment to what Fiona has just asked in terms of how civil society can engage in the process with without a big wallet, so to say. An easy way to do that is actually to talk to your local parliamentarian about internet stuff. That is an easy way to for all of us here sitting in a room to engage with internet governance and talking to the parliamentarians, even more so to those that are running to be elected. Possibly they are even more receptive to what you have at hand than those that are sitting in a respective parliament already. My question is, in terms of the GDC, the Global Digital Compact, do you mind throwing a sentence or two about that as well? Because it's, from my point of view at least, a rather new beast on the floor, and it might actually be a bit in a conflict with the current IGF process. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can, if I'm too educated about that. Once in a while, there are different forms coming where organizations or even the UN is actually somehow divided and forms a new group. The Digital Compact is one of them, which is more, as far as I understand it, more government-driven than multi-stakeholder-driven. And funny enough, they just show up before WSIST plus 20, what a coincidence, and try to form the whole thing in their direction. My takeaway, and that's a very personal one, from the IGF in Kyoto 1.5 months ago was that at least the countries we talked, the Western democracy countries, had no use for it. They were actually rather confused why someone else would open a new fuss about it and make a competing organization which basically contradicts the work and the values on which they work the whole time. But then I talked to 5 and not 150, 200, so it's also not representative.
Lutz Donage for at large, the bizarre one. just to make an opportunity for the people who are interested. At large is one possibility. Before joining at large or Euralo, which is for Europe, please go to the website, have a look at the meetings and decide yourself it's something for you. If you want to go to the ICANN meetings and want to have an influence there, have a look at the ISP constituency in the GNSO for domain names. It's very interesting and they need some new people, but they are doing very, very good and very technical stuff there. If you are going to the address issues, go to RIPE. That's the best opportunity you have. And if you want to go in Germany to something, go to the IGF Germany, which is newly founded and now active. Thanks.
Thank you. But actually, I would agree with all parts, but probably one, and that's again a very personal opinion, I didn't find the ISP constituency to be overly powerful for various reasons. But the at-large, or the Uralo, that's how the European concept is called, it's a nice French person, Sebastian, and a Russian lady, Natalia. They take care quite much about the members, have an interest, and they're very vocal. I guess Sebastian, the ALEC person, even if you could argue he doesn't have a big company behind them, he doesn't represent a country, just by the fact that he is pretty much in every session on the mic once or twice and has quite an opinion about it, gives ALEC quite a not direct but indirect influence where the board and others of us are listening and also understanding. So that is what I would do if I would be try to have an influence or try to understand. Very quick, ICANN meetings are very confusing. It took me probably 3 or 4 to actually figure out where to go. Now you have heard 10% of the words or 20. Have a little bit of a look. If you are interested in these things, probably a RIPE meeting is easier. How governance structure works, because the ICANN is on top of it and quite convoluted and big by now. So it's a little, the entrance barrier is relatively high. Doesn't mean you shouldn't come or participate, quite the opposite, just be mentally prepared. Not that you're overly frustrated. Christian told me to go there, now I'm here. What is that all about? Hello, you.
Hello, Peter Weyers, speaking for myself. You talked about a lot about governmental influence or not influence, mm-hmm. but my concern is more about commercial interests or big companies, international companies, doing their thing, not respecting what some council suggests. Can you say a few words on that? Is there a risk or don't you see there any?
From my perception, I would say the big companies you most likely refer to are not so visible in the internet governance space. They have their own thing. Sure, some of them participate, but they don't try to drive policy there. And usually the American companies, social media networks, and these kind of type for the people who haven't figured out who we talk about. They are usually more interested in lobby work in the particular country or on a European level to have an influence on laws or do their stuff there. I haven't seen them too much on an IGF. But sure, they have an own agenda. It's commercially driven, and they show up there and try to do what is best for their company. There's no question about that. But I see them less on IGFs or on these policy parts. Good.
All right. Then, again, quick round of applause for CK for all his questions.
Thanks a lot.